Hello everyone, testing. How do you guys like those ads, eh? This is a new thing that I'm doing here on the channel. I literally made it 31 seconds. I did a bunch of different takes, made it short, concise, had a nice little joke in there, and just wanted to make it as short as possible because I know how annoying ads can be. So let me know. I'm gonna start putting my email in the in the description of these podcasts, so there is a way for people to contact me directly with feedback. And yeah. So the reason I started doing ads is because they became available. I've been doing podcasts for years now and through Anchor, and making money has been possible that entire time, but only for US citizens. Now it's available for Canadians, and I just decided to try it out. It's been about 3 days or something, and I've made a whopping 44 cents, all thanks to you. So I appreciate that. I know it's not a lot, but there is a part of me that is driven by making money for my creation. I think there's something really fun about creating something and then actually making money from that. Because I see the potential of what it can be. I mean, that's part of why YouTube was so exciting to me. Nobody was paying me to make videos. I mean, occasionally people were, if I would go shoot a wedding or do a video for some business or something back in the day. But it was like a long drawn out process, and then you get a lump sum and it's done. And that's exciting in itself, but with YouTube, you could watch it every day. You could check out the analytics. You could say, oh, my video made 16 cents. Wow, amazing. Oh my God, it's blowing up. It's making $1.25 today. And it was part of what drove me to my success on YouTube. And so that is definitely a drive of mine, and it's good to know. It's good to know what your drives are. And there's part of me that thinks it's a negative thing. Like, I want to be anti-capitalist and I don't want to be driven by money. I don't want it to be a motivation. But I think it's good to just accept how you're built, how you're programmed. I grew up in a capitalist family, I grew up in a capitalist society. And there's part of me deep within that is excited by that. And it gets tired of it and it gets bored of it. And that's okay because, I mean, I was doing this before I was making money. Like I said, years of podcasting. And it's always been whatever, frequent, infrequent, doesn't really matter. I've always had a drive to do this. And now I have another drive now that I'm making 44 whole motherfucking cents, y'all. It's crazy. It's crazy. So, on the topic of money, there's been some big news in the media. The media isn't something I normally talk about unless, well, I guess I get on the media sometimes. But crypto, Ponzi, scheme. So, cryptocurrencies have been ripe for Ponzi schemes since day one. I mean, even the fact that nobody knows who actually created Bitcoin, this could be the most elaborate long game Ponzi scheme in the world. There could just be somebody holding a huge amount of Bitcoin from the get-go, and just one day they just cash out and they're the ones who created it. They have the back door. Some shit, who knows? I don't know the whole ins and outs of all the technical coding, and maybe there is no backdoor in Bitcoin. I don't know. But the reason that cryptocurrency has been so ripe for Ponzi schemes has been the ability for anyone to create a cryptocurrency based on that technology and name it a new token. There's Dogecoin. Literally, the people who created Dogecoin, they made out with a huge amount of money and like fled the country there of origin, and it was a big scandal. And it's still around because it's based on a meme, and because some some guy who just happens to be the richest person in the world keeps promoting it. But you know, there's garbage coin, cum coin, shit coin. There's all these dumbass meme coins, and they're basically based off of they're just copies of other cryptocurrencies with new names and new owners. And so a company that, especially a company that has some immediate utility for a token that they create, you know, what would be that immediate utility that doesn't require building trust with other companies and allowing exchange to happen to these other companies of your token? The company that is so perfect to create immediate utility for their own token is a trading platform, a cryptocurrency trading platform. Because if they have people using that platform to buy and trade Bitcoin, Ethereum, all these other cryptocurrencies, and then they create their own cryptocurrency, which I don't even know what the FTX, I'm talking about FTX, and you know, BlockFi is a bit of a different animal, but FTX is crypto trading crypto. It's a crypto trading platform that created their own token that I believe is was a stable coin, which there was a another stable coin controversy that I think it was called Luna or Tether or something like that, and it was this was a couple months ago, 3 4 months ago now, and it got destabilized and then basically skyrocketed downwards. Sort of, I guess, tumbled, free fell, because skyrocket means going up, right? Skyrockets in flight, ooh, afternoon delight, whoop. But yeah, so falling down, going way down, cryptocurrency. So that was a whole Ponzi scheme basically of itself. But the reason that this one is so interesting is they've created this token. I think it's FTT is the token symbol, abbreviated. And it was tethered to the US dollar, I believe. And if not, it doesn't really matter. But the thing is it had value because of scarcity, because of utility, because basically the founder of FTX said, if you trade us your Bitcoin or your Ethereum, your US dollars, you can exchange it for this token, which will be worth this much, which you can then exchange or use in whatever way it can be used. So it had value just based on the belief that it had value, the exact same reason that money has value, the exact same reason that Bitcoin and every other cryptocurrency, every currency in the world has value, is because somebody says it does. Whether it's a government or whether it's a huge group of people, in the case of Bitcoin, or whether it's a founder and then an emerging group of people that gradually accepts it. Now, what happens when people start to realize that it doesn't have value? Is they, and if they're holding it, they want to get rid of it. So basically, the reason that this is such a problem is because the valuation of this company, FTX, included the share, like the amount of this token that they held, which they made up. So they were leveraging something that didn't really have value and getting something of value, US dollars, investment from other people. Literally, just the everyday cryptocurrency investor could in put their money and stake it on this token and receive a annual or monthly percentage back. And basically they were loaning their money to this company, and this company was then giving them a return on their investment. And that's what a Ponzi scheme is people just constantly investing, and the person moving the money to the previous investor in small increments to be able to pay the interest of these debts, basically. And then the person with the money, they accrue just tons and tons of investment because they're giving this amazing return and gathering all of these people that are in their platform, and they're taking that to other investors, and the investors are saying, "Wow, this looks great. You have great engagement. You have all these people. You have all this money, all this capital, even though it's all made up. We'll give you some more. We'll give you some more made up money." And so basically there was a problem. Or what is weird about this Ponzi scheme is there's another company called Binance, which is a cryptocurrency platform as well, trading platform. They have their own token, but they're not any cryptocurrency platform. They're the biggest cryptocurrency platform in the world, the biggest trading platform. They have their own currency, which is called BNB. I think it's Binance token, Binance shit token. And they had some deal with FTX where they, in payment, they got a huge amount of this token from the FTC or FTT or whatever. And the owner of Binance tweeted that he was going to offload it. He was going to sell it. And so that drove the price of that token down because other people began to sell it because they didn't want to lose out on the amount of value that they had stored in that token. And that run created barriers of withdrawal because FTX didn't have that money for the people withdrawing it. So when that happens and they have to withhold withdrawing, that signals a huge red flag to anybody holding their money in that company, because they immediately say, "Oh, I'm going to lose all my money if I can't get it out. Give me my money." And then that signals to everybody who wasn't aware of this, and anybody who had money on that platform is immediately saying, "Give me my money, give me my money," because it's not safe. It's very unstable, sketchy. And that creates a run on the banks. And this could happen at any bank, basically, because of the loaning process that banks are allowed to do. They're allowed to loan. Banks are basically, if you calculate it all down, able to loan out $1,000 for every $100 that's deposited, because they can loan out, because they only need to hold 10% of that. So if you deposit $100 and they hold $10 of that and they loan out $90 of it, but that loan also goes into a bank account and acts as another deposit, and then they only have to hold 10% of that $90. And so then that, $82 gets loaned out, and then they only have to withhold 10% of that, and then that 70, so it adds up to almost $1,000. And so basically that was the same model that FTX was doing. And the only problem is they're not the only problem, but one of the problems is they're a private company and they're not an institutional bank that is backed by the government and able to receive bailouts. So when this happens, it's not an emergency for the government. It's only an emergency if you hold your investment with them, and because you can't get your investment back, and they're able to just declare bankruptcy and pay their debts out, the investment that all these people had in them, as much as they can, and become insolvent and basically walk away with whatever's left that they can. And the CEO of FTX was worth, what was it, $100 billion, and then overnight or over a couple days he went down to $10 billion, and oh my God, he lost 90% of his wealth in a couple days. He has too much money still. That dude should have $0 and be in jail for doing something so idiotic and stupid. It should definitely be that if you have some kind of currency exchange company, that you can only lend out the same amount of money that you hold, and you should have to be able to return everybody's investment almost immediately. That's what I'm saying. I don't know how that all works. I'm not a, I don't have financial expertise. This is just as much of the story that I know. It's a fascinating story, and it has really shaken up confidence in cryptocurrency because it has shown that it is so susceptible to the systemic problems of all the other financial institutes, but it's even more unstable. This was supposed to be a technology that was decentralized, taking the power away from people that shouldn't hold that much direct power. It was supposed to form trust within the peer-to-peer network. It was supposed to be better accounting because there's the ledger and there's all the transactions that happen, and there's not as much ability to have funny business happen. There's no way to steal because it has to be transferred, and it gets checked, and it's authenticated by not one source, not two sources, but many. And even though this technology is so powerful in that way, it has been used by people to, in a perfect way, to create the perfect Ponzi schemes and walk away with millions, if not billions of dollars, of the average day speculative investor. And institutional investors too. A lot of big institutional investors got hoodwinked by FTX. There's people on record saying that they're invested in them, that Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank is one, and these people got fucked over, man. And it goes to show you that nobody, not enough people do the deep research that really matters. They overlook things, and they, because they trust one another and one of them says that this thing is okay, then they think, oh yeah, this person knows what they're talking about. Oh, this person knows what they're talking about. It goes on and on and on. And then the people who are naysayers, they don't even get to stand up and have a conversation to these people because both in an echo chamber. They're either in an echo chamber where, cryptocurrency is no good, or this is all a Ponzi scheme way before it's public knowledge that it's a Ponzi scheme, and the people who are all for it don't see that content. They don't see that news. They don't see whatever that information, however it gets transcribed to them, and they only see the information that is basically backing up their own beliefs. And it's this big, huge groupthink thing that happens, and people get screwed. People get screwed. So what does it mean? Well, it means that the positives of the technology of cryptocurrency, while they hold some value, have lost some trust. And that is reflected in the price of every cryptocurrency today, and it will be reflected in that price. I think it's set it back a couple years, if not, I would say it set it back 5 years, but it's possible it only set it back 1 or 2 years. I think it's important for, Bitcoin to have a lot of value in it, be worth a lot. But that will naturally happen when people actually use it. It's not going to happen by speculative investors. It's not going to happen by gamblers. Gamblers are not going to be the ones who, hypebeasts and gamblers and people creating Ponzi schemes, basically just working off the hype machine, are not going to be the ones who implement the reasons why a technology will be successful. They're just benefiting in the short term off of basically mass hysteria. They're not good. They're not good for it. So that is my that's my take on it. Not my usual conversation stuff, but it's been something on my mind. I'm just sitting here in a hotel room talking to my phone, trying it out as a microphone. I don't know how it's going to sound. I'm also using this cool app. Can't remember what it's called. Ophonic recorder, Ophonic Edit. And records like high quality wave files directly onto your phone. You can edit it on there, and it's just perfect for podcasting, as long as it sounds okay. But I might even try a lav mic in here, and yeah, I just wanted to try a couple, try out a new microphone setup for on the road, because I'll be traveling soon. In January, I'm going to Australia and for a month, and then New Zealand for a month, and then BC for a month, and I'll be packing pretty minimally. I won't be bringing my nice Zoom H4n, and so I just want to try this out, and then I'll have my lav mic with my other small recorder, so that if I do a podcast with two people, I can still record it. Getting into the inside baseball here of how I'm going to record podcasts on the road. I'm sure that's very interesting. Thanks everyone for listening. Yeah, I appreciate it a lot. If you want to support the show, you can directly on Patreon. You can also, just share it with a friend. That's the biggest thing. Like podcasts aren't spread by algorithms, they're spread by people. That's the beautiful thing about podcasting still, is it is word of mouth, very much so. Because there are so many podcasts out there and no good platforms to actually find them naturally. You can only find ones that are decentish size. It's very hard to find small podcasts that are good or that fit your need, fit your wants. So if you have friends that are like you and that you think would like this podcast and find something insightful out of the garbage that I spew from my mouth, send it their way. Thanks, everyone, and goodbye. Love you all. On this show, I've talked a lot about money. Investing is an interest of mine. Money is really important. It's a store of energy of ourselves, and basically, we can use it to create in this world. We can make all these different things happen just because of the money that we either use, and the more you accumulate of it, the more you can create. And it's just it's a fascinating subject, and it's a lot easier sometimes to actually save money than it is to make money. So today's sponsor is Mint Mobile. And if you're in the States and you have a cell phone, you can probably save a lot of money by switching to Mint. I mean, Mint has these plans. It's like $15 a month, unlimited calling, unlimited texting, 5 gigabytes of data. They have 4G, 5G plans. And for $30, you can get unlimited data included with that plan. And so it's like $30 unlimited data. And the internet is so powerful. We need to get on there. We need to learn. I mean, you're using the internet right now to listen to this, to download this. It's important to have, and you might be able to save a ton of money by switching to Mint. So check out the link in the description for Mint Mobile, and we get a kickback here. We get a small commission, so it really, really supports the show. It's super, super important to feel like I can actually do this and make a little bit of cash, this podcast. So it's going a long way, and it's really important for you to save money as well. So if you are spending too much on your mobile, go at least check it out. See if the coverage is good for you, if the service is good for you. And basically, it's a smart business as well. What they've done with Mint Mobile is they've basically done what more and more companies are doing to save money and to pass it on to consumers, which is not have a retail store. There's a lot of empty shopping malls out there in the world now because there's no need for companies like Mint Mobile to have a cell phone kiosk in the mall or whatever storefront. And so they can pass those savings from not having to
rent and lease that space, not having to employ those people working there. They can employ people in a more concentrated fashion, so they can have less employees and serve more people, basically. And they do it all online, all through the internet, and the customer service is supposedly pretty good still. That's the other thing too, is you don't want to like lose things by switching to Mint Mobile. So I would just recommend checking them out, see if it's a fit for you. Basically, when I ever have a problem on my cell phone, I'm calling them anyway. I'm not going into a store. That's just, you're just looking to get upcharged basically by going into a store anyway. So check it out. Links in this description, like I said.